Hello, and welcome to the Superhero by Design podcast, a show where we interview real-life superheroes. My name is Ace, and I'll be your host. Today, we have a real treat. The man you're about to meet has lived a true rag-to-riches life story. Not only did he grow up poor, but he also spent most of his childhood in a burn ward due to a traumatic childhood accident. I am so excited to be in the presence of such an amazing yet humble man. Let's jump out of the frying pan and into the fire with Darian, Cosmo, Kazravi. Cosmo, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Ace. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Cosmo is the owner of Cosmo's Q, which is a barbecue company that specializes in award-winning sauces and rubs. He is also the host of the podcast Cosmo Unfiltered. You can find him on Instagram at Cosmo Q, and it's Cosmo with a K. So anyways, Cosmo, I'm going to warn you that I'm not going to pull any punches, okay?
Okay.
You ready to dive right into it?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. Question one. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I really am doing good.
Awesome. Well, I am, like we talked about earlier before the show, I am very excited to talk to you. I'm very excited to meet you. You've done such amazing things in your life. Like I said on the intro, a true rag to riches story. You grew up poor. You're in Oklahoma, from what I understand, right?
Yeah. Yep. I'm in Oklahoma.
Was that where you were born and raised?
Yep. Born and raised in El Reno, Oklahoma.
El Reno. I know Reno, Nevada, but not El Reno, Oklahoma. Is it a small town?
It's a small town, home of the fried onion burger. So,
hey, that is a claim to fame right there. So, awesome, man. Well, hey, yeah, I kind of wanted to get started on just things, I guess, starting from when you were young. So, I guess I'm not going to tell your story. I'll let you tell it, but can you just describe what your upbringing was like?
Well, so we grew up, there was seven of us in a, golly, I don't even know how big that house was. 800 square feet, if that. Oh, wow. So it was a really small home. You know, as you said earlier, at 17 months old, I was involved in an accident where I was burned and spent a lot of my childhood in the Shriners Burn Institute in Galveston, Texas. So I kind of hold a dual citizenship in my eyes between Oklahoma and Texas. So hence the Bucky's hat.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I've got a Bucky's hat too, actually. And shoot, I should have worn it, but I love me some Bucky's, that's for sure.
Yeah, I love Bucky's. So yeah, grew up a lot of, this was before all the remote learning and stuff. So I would go to school in the hospital and then have to come back and go to school. And, you know, it was very challenging for me. Never was big on school. I didn't really understand. I mean, I understood the meaning of it and why you needed it, but it just, my type personality is, you know, find something, you know, find what's wrong with it and make it better. And there was just so much wrong with school, in my opinion, even back then. It's probably worse now, but, you know, so I wasn't really big on school. And then coupled with, you know, being in the hospital a lot, you know, school didn't pan out well for me. I wasn't an A student. Well, I wasn't a B student for that matter. I was a C student at best.
Gotcha. Now, I had a friend in high school who experienced a pretty bad burn incident himself. And I remember, mm-hmm. I think he was probably 8 or 9 when it had happened, but I remember he would continually get skin grafts. Mm-hmm. I don't know how frequently, but I know from what he said, I know it was a painful experience. The scars were pretty intense. From years and years of doing that, he was able to get a lot of the scar tissue taken off. But was that kind of your experience in the hospital, like just skin grafts and pain? Or can you describe a little bit of what you went through?
Yeah, I've had well over 100 surgeries. It happened when I was 17 months old. So, you know, I was, you know, maybe 20, 25, 30 inches tall, something like that. And I was burned. It actually happened in a bathtub. I was in the bathtub and the phone rang. And back then, my mom turned off the water and just walked right around the corner to pick up the phone. And, you know, anybody that knows about phones on walls, you had a 20-foot extension cord. Well, before she made it back to the bathroom, my older sister, who was only 3 at the time, wanted to help. So she grabbed the, you know, she turned on the water and started rinsing me off. And I was standing backwards. So I was burned all down my back, my butt, the back of my legs, and obviously my feet. Mm-hmm. So growing, you know, over the years, it was just constant, you know, release skin graft, release skin graft, release skin graft. And it just went on and on and on. And I actually never thought it would end. I'm a firm believer in, you know, no matter how bad you have it, there's always somebody that has it worse, but shit, man, I wouldn't wish this on nobody, you know. That's pretty painful.
Yeah. No, I can't even imagine. And being so young, especially at that age, that's all you knew, right? Like you didn't have any mm-hmm. memories before that. And it was kind of a normal part of life. But at the same time, it sounds like it was, not enjoyable at all. And did you get, you had mentioned also with school, not really working well within the confines of school, I'm assuming. It had just the basic structure of it, teachers telling you what to do, how to believe, things like mm-hmm. that. How were the children as well? Like, did you make friends? How was it growing up? I guess what I'm trying to get at is obviously you had burns, but they were on the back of your body, so you could cover them pretty easily. Did you experience mm-hmm. any issues with children as well, or... anything like
well,
that?
You know, I never showed my body. I never wore shorts until I think I was like 21 or 22 years old. And just because when it did, especially when I would go to the swimming pool in the summer, everybody would just, you know, stare at you, you know, because they didn't know. I mean, they had no ill intent. Yeah. Most of them didn't. A lot of them did because, you know, kids are just mean in general. You know, they have never seen anything like that. And they would, you know, a lot of staring, a lot of questions. And it was just like the same question over and like over and over and over, you know, what happened? How did it happen? You know, things like that. So I just chose at a young age just to wear pants and, you know, I never wore flip flops or anything like that. I still don't to this day. So I would just cover up and, you know, just to avoid a lot of that, just so I would be somewhat seen as a regular, a normal person, which inherently put the belief in me that I wasn't normal.
Gotcha. I was going to ask that if you were striving to be normal or if it was something that you could use to empower you to say, hey, I'm not like everybody else, but hey, I don't want to be like everybody else. Yeah.
Well, that didn't come till later in life. <You know? laughs> As a kid, you know, as a child, you just, you don't know, you know, and you always ask yourself the question, why am I different than everybody else? What did I do to deserve this? You know?
Yeah, that must have been a really tough thing to go through mentally and psychologically because you were essentially born into it. And yep. There was no cause and effect. And
yeah,
I could see how that could really be kind of a mind fuck at times. Especially, being so young and not knowing any different, mm-hmm. just knowing that people keep looking at you, staring at you, you feel those eyeballs on you. So, mm-hmm. I appreciate you sharing that. That's pretty intense.
Well, I think we all go through it one way or the other. It just, you know, my story is my story. I think everybody has that story though, you know, and mine is, you know, obviously, you know, very physical, very out, you know, outlooking, you know, a lot of people have that on the inside, which right. is probably, you know, probably could be somewhat worse, you know? Yeah.
No, nobody can see it, but you can feel it yourself.
Yeah.
From the inside. So, yeah, it's like everything, you know, they talk about, well, on the outside, everything was fine. They seem like a normal person, but yeah, I see what you mean as far as, yeah, having that on the inside. So you had mentioned not being a fan of school. Did you make it all the way through high school, or how'd that end up turning out?
Man, I got pretty damn close, man. I got pretty close. I remember I was in 11th grade and I was just bad at school. I was always told, sit down, be quiet, quit doing that. What's wrong with you? You know, why can't you just be normal? Why can't you just act like everybody else? And, you know, the fact of the matter is I wasn't like everybody else. And I remember at one point in the 11th grade, when we would do the semester tests, I woke up one day and I thought, okay, I'm going to kill this. I'm going to knock this out of the park. I'm going to try. Cause normally I'd just get bored and I'd just start circling, you know, or coloring in the dots in just random order. So I thought, okay, I'm going to hammer down and I'm going to put in massive effort to ace these. And it turns out I aced them. And I went from, I don't know what the classes are now, back when I was growing up, they put you in developmental classes. So you had, you know, regular classes. And then below that, you had the developmental classes, the slow learners. And then above that, you had the, I don't even know what to call it.
Like accelerated.
Talented and gifted. They call it TAG in Oklahoma. It was called TAG, talented and gifted. So I went in and I did the semester test and I aced them. And I remember I'm calling my parents in. They're like, something's not right because his report cards say this, but this test says this. So either he cheated, which is next to impossible, or he really is and he's just not trying. So I remember they put me in TAG. So I went from developmental past regular classes into TAG classes. And golly, I was like, man, this is boring. And it was just very, you know, I like to explain it like that. Those are from my perspective, and I'm not saying this is accurate, just my perspective. Those are the people that can lock in and focus on one thing and just hammer it. And, you know, just engineer it all the way out. And I'm just not cut like that. I'm very much ADHD and what's next and squirrel and, you know, all the things. So I didn't last very long there. So it was kind of traumatic for me going from developmental to TAG. And then all of a sudden within weeks, they put me back down in developmental classes.
Oh, wow. Wow. So flip flop pretty quick there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you said you barely made it, or I guess you didn't make it to graduation. So what did you start doing once you got out of high school?
I immediately started working. That's, you know, I worked all the way through high school. I think I got a job when I was, it was when I got my motorcycle's license. It was a permit. So I was 13 and a half years old is when I got my first job. And I've been working ever since. I think the longest I've probably ever been out of work is maybe a week. So immediately after I decided high school was dragging me down, I went to work actually in the restaurant industry and at Robert's Grill in El Reno, Oklahoma, which is home of the fried onion burger. The El Reno is, but Robert's was, you know, the first place in El Reno that made it famous. And I just started working there. And just for some reason, once I started knowing what it felt like to in my 18-year-old brain, you know, get money. Once I knew how to get money, then I was like, okay, I think I got this figured out. You know, if you work 40 hours a week, you can get this much. But if you work 50, you can get this much and so on and so forth. So I've worked my whole life for the majority of it. I had two jobs, too. So I would go to work at a after the restaurant industry, I went into manufacturing.
Okay.
There was a manufacturer in our town, Dexter Axle, and I started there. I started there at the bottom floor and just started working my way up. But after I would leave the, manufacturing job, I'd go bartend or something like that in at night, just because, growing up poor, I didn't have money, and now I'm starting to, have some money. And then I figured, oh my gosh, if I can work, 15, 16, 18 hours a day, I'm going to get so much further ahead than everybody else. And then I could pay my bills and, party all I want. And then, then I quit paying my bills and started partying way more than I should. And, finally ended up hitting rock bottom. I think my credit score was, 100 and something, if that's even possible. I couldn't buy anything. So one day I was just like, okay, well, this ain't going to work either. So apparently you got to pay your bills. So it's time to start getting serious about that. So, that's when I really started learning about finances.
Okay.
Because we were never taught.
Yeah. So it sounds like work kind of worked out for you because it was a linear thing. You put in X amount of hours, you get X amount of money. You put in more over time and a half, whatever the structure was, it made sense because for the effort you put in, you got a direct result that was, that you knew what was going to happen essentially. But at the same time, you started to make money and then you're like, well, I want to enjoy life. I want to party. And, I was raised a very similar way. My mother was from Indiana. And we just grew up in a blue collar household, and you worked hard for the money that you make. There was no being lazy. There was no sitting around. And so we'll get into the financial part of it, 'cause I think that's huge, but I was kind of the same way. It's like, well, if I work harder, then the results will come, more money. I was very good at school, but I was one of those people, like you said, that you aren't, where I could just sit and focus. And I learned for myself, the more work I put in with school, the better the grades I would get. And so there was this cause and effect that gave me a lot of certainty. If I studied hard enough, I'll do fine, I'll pass. And then if I work hard enough, work enough hours, I'll make the money that I need. And as long as in my mind, it was very simple. As long as my income is higher than my expenses, I'm going to be good. And everything that's left over, I'll put it in savings. But at the same time too, that's a very, I wouldn't say outdated, because it's financially stable, but that's like the base of the financial pyramid. Because you're not losing money, but you're not really leveraging it. And so,
yeah. Just to add on to what you're saying there, what I automatically learned was how to trade time for money.
Yep. Yep.
And that at the core of it is the foundation of, capitalism, how to trade time for money. And then once I realized that I have no more time to trade, so I'm capped at how much money I can make, that's when, once again, how I'm wired is okay, I have a problem. How can I find a solution?
Right.
And quit trading time for money. And or compress time. And that's when I realized that, if you work 8 hours a day, I can work 16 hours a day. I can get 2 days to your one.
Gotcha.
So over a year's time, then I'm compressing time. And then once I really learned to compress time and not sell myself, but to sell, something, a product, information, or something like that, that's what really took off for me.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, I heard an interview that you had, and you had mentioned essentially when you started your barbecue business, you had a wife, two young kids, or at least a young family at that point. And you were kind of back against the wall, like, I have to make this work. Can you walk us through that time of your life and where you were at and what caused this? Because this isn't a minor shift. Most people, I believe, go through their lives, the good and the bad, but they never grow or change specifically when it comes to finances and doing what you just said, compressing time, not trading time for money linearly anymore. So what was it that really forced that change? Because as we know, I like to use the example of diamonds. It takes an immense amount of pressure to change coal into a diamond. So there must have been something going on where there's just this intense amount of pressure on you or your life.
Yeah. So when we had a young family, and I was to the point, I think our girls were about 2.5, 3 years old. And I was just like, you know, I can't continue to do what I've been doing, which is partying, working. And it was just this revolving door. So once my wife and I moved in together, we had a little house, and the rent was $500 a month. And it was just, that was an absurd amount to me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I need to start getting more money. Well, I was like, well, in order to quit losing so much money, I got to quit going out. So I woke up one day and I thought, well, man, one of their hobbies is barbecuing. So I was like, okay, I'm going to learn how to barbecue. And I went to Walmart and bought a $50 cooker, and bought some, I think I bought a chicken, chuck roast or some shit, and some hot links and stuff. And I remember the day that I transformed myself into a dad. I was trying to barbecue this meat, and this is before, you know, the internet was around, but it was so infant. It wasn't a source of information yet. So there was, you know, really no place you could go online, and, you know, there was no place to go online and watch a video. You know, YouTube wasn't even invented yet.
Right. Yeah. So
anybody that knows me knows that I will blindly set off on a task seeking failure. And then I know if I can find failure, I can adjust, you know, and reengage. So come dinner time, we put all this food out on the table, and my wife and kids, my wife sitting right over here, she's hearing the story again. I remember saying, oh, this is good. And I tasted it. And I was just like, you know, this is horrible, horrible. Like, it's not even, this is unedible. And I said, we can't eat this. We got to throw this away. And I remember her holding the trash can lid open as I threw it away, and just something like in my soul was like, this is not okay. If you can't, you know, provide for your family, you know, what kind of human are you? And this is, you know, I'm not saying that to anybody else. This is just, you know, what I told myself. So I was at that point, I was like, game on. So I will figure this out, and ended up getting a smoker from my wife's father-in-law, who it was in a field, been there for God knows how many years, pulled it out. It was a horrible smoker. Didn't work right, but it was better than what I had. Cleaned it up, and that's when I started just obsessively. That is the one thing I can do, is once I think I have ADHD and obsessive compulsive disorder, because once I get focused in on something, I am probably the most relentless person in the world. I will not take my hooks out of something until I know I've mastered it.
Well, that's incredible.
And just over the years, just started getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And to me, it had nothing to do with money. I think all the lessons I learned before that were needed in the foundational experience of what I went through. But then this is the first time in my life I was actually focused on something, like, and with no end other than just Jesus Christ, man, let's eat some damn good food, you know?
Yeah.
And then it took a couple of years, and then we looked up and saw that there was a barbecue competition not far from our house. And I was like, we should enter. And we did, and drug everything down there in two loads of our minivan, and ended up competing, and ended up winning the rib category. And I was hooked from there. Like, mentally, I can flash back. And you know, side note, this is the God-given gift that I've been given, is the way I taste food and the way it regulates with my memory is uncanny. I can go back, you know, and I can taste something or smell something once, and then I can automatically go back in my head and I know what it is, and I can recreate it. And I remember when we won ribs, how that rib tasted versus how my very first cook was, and they were light years apart. And that's when I started realizing that, you know, I'm not like everybody else. I can taste things that most people can't taste, and even subtle things. I mean, I can taste a teaspoon of cinnamon in, you know, a gallon of barbecue sauce.
Oh, wow.
So that's when I really started changing. And for the first time, you know, I remember waking up and I finally thought, man, what we have on the shelves to use for barbecue, you know, it's good, but there's nothing in it that wows you. So that's when I started making my own rubs and testing. And then and I was like, oh shit, I actually can direct the flavors that I want to see happen with this process. And then, you know, started competing more, started, you know, making rubs, and then people would ask me to buy them. And then the business wasn't even a business. Like, I would just make some rubs and use them or give them to a buddy or sell them to somebody. And I remember when it came a business for me, I was actually at a barbecue competition, and back then there was only two brisket injections on the market, and there were two companies. One of them happened to be here in Oklahoma too. And I was trying to use it, but I couldn't get it to taste right. And it's, you know, per me, like, I'm sure there's nothing wrong with his injections. There's a lot of people that use it and have won with it over the years, but to me, it just didn't taste right. So I walked up to this individual and I said, hey man, I'm using your brisket injection and I just can't get it to taste right. Is there anything you can help me with? And he's a great guy. Love him to death now. I'd do anything in the world for him. But at the time, I guess I caught him at the wrong time. And he looked at me and said, yeah, you can read the directions. And he shut his door in my face. And I was that is the second this company started. Because I was so fucking furious that I didn't have a lot of money back then, you know, but I spent my money to buy this, and this is how I get treated. And I was like, fuck it, I'll make my own.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I made my first brisket injection and pork injection. And I remember when it was such a long road. I actually got a hold of the manufacturer of the actual product that I needed to make. It was an ingredient in the product. And I asked them to order some. And she was like, okay, well, how much you need? And I was like, oh, I don't know, 50 pounds. And she, it was just an awkward pause. And she goes, we only do 3,000 pound batches. I was like, oh shit. But she put me in contact with some people that would manufacture it for us. And that is the one and only time I ever really took a loan on the company. I bought 50 pounds of brisket and pork injection and put it on a credit card. And at the time, I was learning even more about finances going through Dave Ramsey, but I knew I was going to get in trouble, but I knew I had to do this. So, I put it on my credit card and all I said is, I just got to sell it. I just got to get enough to pay for this and buy the next batch. So I did the math and that's what I sold it for. And boom, here we are.
That's incredible. Yeah. It takes, I think before doing anything great, it takes a leap of faith, because if you're going to do anything great in the world, there's so much uncertainty because you're venturing into unknown territory, uncharted waters. And I think that's, it takes courage, but it also takes commitment. And it sounds like one of the motivators for you, I hear a repeated theme in your life, is when someone tells you, and I'm saying it a little differently, but when someone tells you, you can't do this, or somebody shuts the door in front of your face, and you use this anger in a positive way. You don't just say, screw it, I'm going to the bar, drown my misery. It's like, no, I'm going to prove all the naysayers wrong. Anyone who doubts me or doesn't believe in me, I'm going to show them what I'm capable of. And the thing I also love that you had mentioned is you weren't happy with the products that were on the market. And with your, I would call it a superpower, your ability to taste flavors and remember flavors and that sort of thing, you recognize right away. It's uncanny what you're able to do. I wish I had that kind of power. I love barbecue. I love food. And you were like, well, if it doesn't exist, fuck it. I'm going to make it myself. I'm going to make something that I'm proud of, that I can put my name on and show the world and say, yes, I gave this my best and here it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of, you know, probably stubbornness or whatever, but at some point in life I had to look up and I went, you know, it's, you know, no one gives a shit about me. You know, at the end of the day, no one's going to help me. I'm in this on my own, obviously my family, but you know, this is up to me.
Yeah. And I always tell people, no one's going to care about your life more than you are. No one's going to care about your business more than you are. You'll have people in your corner, people supporting that love you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it sounds harsh, but no one cares.
No one cares. I don't know that it's harsh, you know, cause now we're, you know, I feel like we're being trained to, you know, you can't say things like that to people.
Right.
But yet we say it to ourselves every morning when we stare ourselves in the mirror, you know, that's the worst enemy in your life. And when you come to grips with that and learn to quit tearing yourself down and realize that no one gives a shit about you, you know?
Yeah.
And this happens day in and day out. When you die, I mean, we don't sit here and talk about people that died 2 weeks ago. So why should we give a shit what they think now? That's my mentality is, you know, after I'm dead, no one's going to talk about me, you know? So why would I let them have so much input into my thoughts and my patterns right now? I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know a few people in my life, and I used to be like this. I would care a lot about external criticism, external validation from other people, because it felt good. You know, when someone says, hey, good job, like you really killed it, I would be like, sweet, you know? But then it turned into, well, if I didn't get that, and I feel like it happens so much in social media, people are just living and dying off of likes or comments, and they put their heart out or they decide to be vulnerable and they only get 2 likes and they feel rejected. And it sucks that a lot of people live like that, and because it's utter and complete bullshit. Like I honestly believe that everybody is born with special gifts, like your gift of taste, your gift of hard work. My gift, I would say, is my heart, my love for people. I got that from my mother, and it's a legacy that I want to carry on in my life. And it breaks my heart to see people not feel like they're worth anything. But at the same time, when you're seeking things externally, rather than internally building yourself up, internally working on yourself, internally being your biggest cheerleader, like it, you're just going to live a, in a lot of ways, a very unfulfilling life. And it sucks that I think a lot of people fall victim to that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And it's sad. And it's, I think it takes, you know, we're all created individually, you know, different from each other. I heard the SEALs have a saying, one is none, two is one. And I really do believe that. And meaning we can go further, farther, faster together than we can alone. And then when you're just sitting there alone and believing because, you know, you're not getting the affirmations that you feel you're entitled to, that's, golly, I'm glad I'm not built like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sad. It breaks my heart. And I actually love talking to people that are built like that because, you know, maybe I can, in some way can, you know, give them a, just to let them know, like, yeah, you know, that's not who you are, you know, that's who you probably think you are, but that's not who you are, you know,
right.
Deep down.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to, my middle name is Joseph and I used to call myself, I didn't know it at the time, but I have a name for my former self and I called myself Average Joe. I didn't want to be number one. I didn't want to be the first in line. I was cool being like in the middle, not being exposed, all of that. And everything I did, I did a lot of things well. I worked hard, I provided for my family, but internally I just felt like I was mediocre and that I deserved a mediocre life. And it wasn't until I was able to break that limiting belief that I was able to really change my life very quickly and start doing things that really empowered me, made me feel alive, made me want to just jump out of bed in the morning and really hit the ground running and live life fully every day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a gift. It is a gift. You know, and it's funny you say that. I was 48 years old. And coupled with my childhood, the way it was, when I was turned 48 years old, I found out my dad wasn't my dad.
Oh, wow.
And immediately everything came rushing back in my childhood. Like, oh my God, that's why he never told me he loved me. And I went to a golf lesson this summer and the guy gave my golf lesson. He's a wonderful golfer. I've only been there once, but I remember he put his hand on my shoulder and he patted me. He was looking out the range or something after I hit a ball. And he said, good job, son. And I went and got in my truck and I almost cried because I was like, I'm 50 years old. And that's the first time I ever heard that from a man.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, so I try to be better than that. And, you know, I've sucked at it a lot. You know, I was probably a pretty shitty person when I got hyper-focused on my career, to my family, to my kids. And, you know, I think about stuff like that and think about nobody's perfect, but what could I have done different? And once you realize that, you know, obviously the best time to not be an asshole was 20 years ago, but the next best time is right now. So
today, yep.
Yeah. I always try to, you know, live life from don't fight backwards. You can't change yesterday. You know, you can change today. So, you know.
Yeah. I like to think of it. I grew up playing video games like Nintendo and Sega Genesis and all that. And so I like to tell myself that every time I go to sleep and I fall asleep and I wake up in the morning, it's like hitting the reset button on the video game. So, what I did yesterday, I'll remember, but it doesn't matter because that day is gone. I don't have that time anymore. Yep. And so I'm starting fresh every day. A mentor of mine called it kill your clone. So you want to kill the clone from yesterday and be better every day. And once you let go of the past and say, okay, what is done is done. I made mistakes. I'm fallible. I'm not perfect. But that's when you can, like you said, you could start taking steps forward. You could start fighting forward instead of fighting backwards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, that's incredible. Real quick, Cosmo is the owner of Cosmo's Q, which is a barbecue company that specializes in award-winning sauces and rubs. Check him out also on his podcast, Cosmo Unfiltered. And you can also follow him on Instagram at Cosmo's Q. Now, we talked a lot about your upbringing, early times in life, and the start of your company. Now, from what I've read, your company now is a $50 million company, which is absolutely insane. You said you started with $500 on your credit card, built it up to a $50 million company. How's life today? How's life different?
You know, that's a great question. I heard something yesterday that said, and I can't remember the exact quote, it was a Brene Brown quote. When you spend your whole life fighting and then you hit the point where you don't have to fight, you don't got to keep fighting. And I'm at my lake house. We just bought a lake house, which is absolutely unheard of in my family lineage. And yesterday I was coming up here and I was working. I'm stressing out and I'm like, you know, I heard that quote and I was like, just because you train for battle every day, and that's really what entrepreneurship's. It's, you know, I really wish people would, you know, on social media, they make it look so cool. It fucking sucks. It's hard. It's horrible. The mental and physical stress it puts on your body is unheard of. But I was sitting there thinking about it. I was like, that's really what happened. You know, it's like, you know, I fought for so long that now that I still have to, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not going to wake up and just lay down, you know, but I don't have to fight as hard now as I did then. So I'm working on trying to learn to calm my brain to not be in, there is no flight mode for me. So it's always fight mode, but how can I just, you know, come out of fight mode and just start to enjoy, you know, the blessings, you know, that were given to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so important. I know Brene Brown, not personally, but I know her stuff. I'm a huge Tony Robbins guy as well. And one of the things that Tony always talks about is different seasons of your life. It sounds like you were in a winter for a long time, financially struggling, pushing through that snow. And then you started to barbecue. That was kind of your spring. You're starting to plant all these seeds, finance. You were doing it with finances, business, your craft. And then for the past, I don't know how many years, probably 10 plus years, you've been in summer. So you're working the field, you're growing the business, you're growing yourself. And I feel like you've hit a harvest season now. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying, okay, yeah, you could shut everything off and just go back to the party mode yesteryear. But if you recognize what season you're in, you'll know how to adjust properly. For me personally, I'm in a winter season right now. And once I realized, holy crap, I'm in winter. That's why I'm struggling. I feel like I'm waist deep in snow every day and I'm trudging through my businesses, my personal life. But once I recognized what season I was in, I was like, okay, I know what I need to do. I don't have to give it my best every day. I have to do what's required of me every day. And it might not be my best, but I'm not focused on that right now. I'm focused on getting the job done, getting through this snow, because we know every season isn't going to last forever. They don't always last. Mm-hmm. Everything is impermanent. So that's kind of a thing that I've used for me personally, because I was dealing with a lot of, I call it head garbage, the last few months. And I was like, holy crap, it's because I'm in winter. And I was hoping that I was in a fall or at least a summer or something like that. And yeah, once I recognized that, I was like, okay, now I can adjust appropriately. And that's not going to take away from whatever season you're in. You're still going to have similar values. You're going to have the same work ethic, but at least you're able to understand where you are, and you could take that and move forward accordingly.
Yeah. And you just saying that made me think about, you know, okay, now I know what playbook I should be operating out of. Right.
Right. Yep.
Because when you're in winter, you don't want to be operating in, you know, a spring or fall playbook. You need winter, you know, winter plays, so to speak, just like in football, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're planting seeds in winter, those seeds are going to die.
Yeah. you're going to have bigger problems.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. So no, I appreciate you sharing that, because it's interesting to talk about that, because what you did to get to where you are right now isn't necessarily required unless you want to continue growing 500 million, mm-hmm. a billion, whatever your goals are. You got to, that's important too, right? Like, I think what they say, if people are making around 70,000 a year financially, making any more than that doesn't really change their quality of life. It's more mm-hmm. internally what's going on. And I'm not taking away from what you did. Like, I want to build my businesses to the size of yours. Like, you're with building businesses, you don't only get financial stability, but you're able to help a lot more people. You have a bigger platform. Mm-hmm. You have a lot more options. And from listening to your podcast, you have so much value to give other people. Like, you have that superpower of your rubs and your spices and your injections and all of that for any barbecue lover or people that don't even necessarily love barbecue, but just love good food. That's one gift, but your podcast is something completely different. You're able to help people with their mindsets, help people turn their life around. And I just love that that's becoming a new part of your journey, a new part of your career, because you have a great platform to lead other people and change their lives for the better. And I think that is, if I'm assuming that's your mission, because that's the sense I get from it, but I just love it. It's absolutely amazing what you're doing.
Well, and from the way I thought about it was, you know, fire has brought people together for thousands of years, right? Whether you use it to keep warm, cook food, you know, burn a field, whatever, you know, it brings people together. And part of bringing people together is not necessarily, you know, what's in it for me, but how can we help each other? How can we, you know, love on each other better, treat each other better? You know, once again, we can go further, farther, faster together than we ever will alone. And that's kind of what it is for me. It's like, you know, I used to tell myself that, man, I just want to change one person's life, you know, and I kept looking for that person. And, you know, finally I woke up one day and I realized, you know, hey, that person's me. You know, you can't change anything, you know, until you change you first.
Yeah.
And once I realized that, I was like, okay, when I'm ready to give back and, you know, in a sound place to give back, because, you know, there's probably a lot of advice that I had to give that you probably wouldn't want to take back then. But I felt like, okay, when I'm ready to do that, when I know I'm good in here, then I will.
Yeah. It's getting your priorities straight. Like, people can, I think, erroneously think it's being selfish that you're spending time working on yourself, developing yourself. But if you don't do that, you're not going to be properly equipped to help other people out. Well, mm-hmm. I know some people use it's become a little trite, but, you know, when the oxygen mask comes down in an airplane,
put your
oxygen on first or else you're going to be useless for everybody else. Yeah. But I feel like that's so true, that you got to work on yourself. You got to better yourself, because that means now you can be a better leader, a better father, a better mm-hmm. husband, a better steward of the community. And I feel like that is so important, that people spend time working on themselves, developing themselves, because they're just going to have more to be able to give to other people. And that ultimately, I always say, be more so you can do more. But be more comes first. There's no do more without being more. And right. So I appreciate you sharing that.
I agree.
So... No, that's awesome. So what's next? You've got this amazing business. And by the way, I'm definitely going to be purchasing some of your rubs and spices. I am absolutely in love with barbecue. And I, before this podcast, before I did my research on you, I didn't know much, and to hear the type of product that you've put together, I'm going to go right away and purchase some of your dry rubs specifically. I'm a dry rub. I love dry rubs. But what's in the future? What do you have going on right now? Any passion projects or anything you'd like to talk about?
Right now it's just, we're trying to get more focused with, you know, with ourselves and with our people, and just kind of cut loose a lot of the extra stuff that we were doing that we probably shouldn't have been doing, and get focused on, you know, how can we do more for our community? How can we, you know, be of a better service to our community? And that's where we're focused at. And that's going to look like more of the things that got us to where we are. And that's by teaching the lessons we've learned and giving them away for free. So a lot more barbecue how-tos coming in the near future.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So helping people, obviously, with the food, with the barbecue, but also with their lives. I saw a video with you wearing a Live Lucky hat. I don't own one myself, but I'm a huge fan of their products. And I love their slogan or tagline, mission statement, whatever you want to call it. And it says something to the effect like, great things happen by chance, but more often, greater things happen by choice.
Mm-hmm.
And from what you've told me just in the short amount of time we spent together today, there are periods in your life where you made choices, and you made very demanding choices, but it was a choice that you made and just forged forward. And failure wasn't, it's like you burned your ships, like, you know, they say
burn the boats. Yeah, that's exactly the mentality. That's the exact mentality I have. If you want to take the island, burn the boats.
Yeah. And it was made by a conscious choice. And I just love that. And just like the Live Lucky apparel, their hats, all of that, they love to focus on quality and product unlike none other. And it sounds like your products are like that as well. And out of that, out of who you are, the products you deliver, you're inspiring others to live life not only to the fullest, but to create an authentic life that's unique to each person and their own experiences. And all of that I just stole from Live Lucky, but I feel like that applies to you. And it's so crazy that I saw that video with you wearing that hat, because I love their brand. And I think it's whether you knew all of that or not, I think it speaks so true to the person you are, the man you are. And you're just an absolutely incredible person.
Well, thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. I believe that everyone ends up somewhere. Only few end up somewhere on purpose. So, you know, I always try to make sure that I know my purpose.
That's incredible. That's incredible. That's what I love to preach, is being, once you start doing things on purpose, you start living a purposeful life. It's kind of funny how that works, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so easy and simple. Yeah. You know, it's very easy for me to make it difficult.
Well, you sound a lot, I'm an engineer by trade, a structural engineer. And you talk about, if there's a problem, solve it. That's a very engineering-esque mindset. And the biggest struggles I've had in my life are just in between my two ears. It's all the stuff, overcomplicating things, making things harder than they should, having these rules. I used to create so many rules, like, well, to experience it this way, X, Y, and Z need to happen. And once you start letting go of the negative mindsets, the rules, and getting out of your own way and just letting yourself do what you were designed to do, man, that is a complete game changer. And your life will instantly change in a flash.
Mm-hmm. 100%. It's funny you say that. One of our, or two of our core values are, one of them is details matter. And the other one is we do everything with the simplest, most effective way in mind. Those two don't go together normally.
Right.
You know, you can't focus on the details and be simple, but yet I figure we can. And that's, I think that's the beauty in what we do. Like our company is so simple to run. It's not simple to run, but it's just, we do everything with the simplest, most effective way in mind. I try not to over engineer something that doesn't need engineered in the first place.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. No, I love simplicity. And I always say just because it's simple doesn't necessarily mean it's easy. I think some of those things, some simple and easy sometimes get put together. And what is it? Elvis used three chords. The Beatles used three chords, or Elvis used two or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Simplicity is great, but not everybody can do simple. Like not everybody can be Elvis, because being Elvis, being the Beatles was not easy. They put in the time, the work, and they had insane natural talent. But simplicity is what wins day in and day out. And I think that's what we have to strive for, is how do we make our lives simpler? How do we make our businesses simpler? But that doesn't come easy.
And what better way than a barbecue? I mean, if you think about it, like at the end of the day, the Friday night barbecue, it's so simple to just, you know, with you and the ones you love and care about, family and friends.
I love it. I love it. Breaking bread. That's what it's all about. At the end of the day, you get to run a business that's your passion. And man, you can't ask for something more than that in life, mixing the two, your passion, something that brings you immense pleasure, but also brings you financial stability and just builds a community where you can influence and teach and help other people grow. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on. I was, and still am, even now that we've gotten to talk, I'm so excited to have met you. I am so excited that we have talked about this. I probably will have a million barbecue questions for you after the show, but absolutely amazing. You are an amazing person, an amazing individual, and I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your time with us.
Well, shoot me an email, brother. I would love to send you some stuff, you know, and just to say thank you for what you're doing. And if you got any questions, you know how to get a hold of me.
That's right. That's right. Well, shoot, I make my way to Texas semi-frequently. So I just need to take that car and drive a little bit more north and come see you and see what it's all about in person.
Bingo.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, for those of you who are listening, once again, this is Cosmo from Cosmo's Q. He is the owner of Cosmo's Q, which is an amazing barbecue company. Tons of award-winning sauces and rubs. Definitely check them out. Also check out his podcast, Cosmo Unfiltered, and also follow him on Instagram at Cosmos Q. So thank you once again for tuning in. I really appreciate the time that you spend with us, and I hope that you get something out of this. I know I do every time. And with that said, Ace out.